Hello and welcome to the Round Table Podcast. My name is Sean Booth and here we are on the first Sunday of every month. And today we have the honour of having Louise Ward. Louise, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great, you're welcome. It's great to be here.
For those who don't know, Louise is a counsellor and psychotherapist in South Dublin. She is also the co-founder of Zest Life Training, which professionally trains counsellors right across the country. And Louise and her husband, Jerry, have also been a part of Open Arms Church in Dublin from day one and are also very close to myself and Gillian. Have been a great strength and support, especially in this past season. Also, has helped guide me through one of the most traumatic times in my life, having a severe head trauma and going through all that. And you really just guided me through that. And so it's great to be able to have you here today and just to be able to speak to people and help people emotionally, mentally. And today we are focusing on relationships. And so in this season of lockdowns, restrictions, COVID, everything that goes along with it, I really feel like relationships have been the one thing that has been negatively affected, even more than our economy, education. And really, it's affected negatively in two ways. Firstly, it's created so much space and distance that's filled with tension and difficulty and not feeling connected. But the flip side of that is also there's no space and distance between particularly couples, families, those living together, which can exaggerate existing tensions and arguments and disagreements and frustrations. And of course, there's a bunch of positives as well. So we're going to have a conversation today around that. And we're going to be focusing on four key relationships because we know that not everyone who's listening is married or has children. So we're going to be looking at romantic relationships and marriages, children and family, friends, extended family, and of course, then church and community. So, as I said, you've been in the counseling room for many years, and especially in this last season. Tell us a little bit about, what are you seeing right now, particularly relating to couples coming through the counseling room?
I think when couples come into my office, the first thing I say to them is, "How are you?" And pretty much from almost all the couples that I've seen, what they're saying to me is, we're fed up. Mm. We're fed up with this. We're fed up with the isolation. We're fed up being cooped up together. And it's not that, it's not that they don't love each other. It's that it's the fact that being cooped up together creates frustrations, creates frustrating behaviors, and leaves gaps for couples to, push each other's buttons. Mm. And when they push each other's buttons, it's almost like, frustration rises. They tip off something that they know kind of irritates their partner, or they have a sense it might irritate their partner.
Yeah.
And if it's a raw spot, it's a little bit like an emotional skin that people have. And you rub off it, it hurts, it's painful. And it sometimes explodes and ruptures. And when it does that, it bleeds all over the relationship. And what happens then is that, couples get into this dance of distress where they just feel maybe isolated from one another, lonely. They find it difficult to come back and reconnect. And depending on their personalities and depending on how they are, will depend on how they react in situations.
Yeah. And obviously with this COVID season and mental health being one of the biggest areas being affected, how has that played into this, what you're talking about with couples?
I think it's very difficult for couples to manage it, and I think what I'm seeing is a lot of anxiety.
Right.
I've seen more couples and more individuals within relationships end up with things like panic attacks. I've seen a massive increase in OCD, within couples. And I suppose the therapist in me is wondering, is there a sense that it feels like everything's out of control and they need to have something that they control?
Yeah.
And that they control this. And so, of course, OCD is a type of an anxiety disorder. So when people are anxious, they're going to do stuff and behave in ways that maybe they wouldn't if there wasn't something like this on.
Yeah.
I think the other thing, you know, is loneliness. And I think even for couples, there's loneliness, you know, yeah. even though they have somebody. I've still seen couples, and when I would ask them to delve just a little beneath the surface of what's going on, you know, one of the words that comes up is loneliness, you know, and even though they have a partner, and I think the loneliness is out of maybe a lack of connection, a feeling of being on their own,
yeah.
Maybe feelings of there's no fun anymore, we've nothing to do. We're just seeing the four walls. We're spending our time painting.
Yeah.
And maybe it's related to some of those things as well.
Yeah. I relate to that myself. And myself and Gillian, you know, we have a strong and healthy marriage that we have to continuously work on. But we have found ourselves getting short at one another, having arguments about something that, you know, you would forget about in 5 minutes, and just having great frustration, because like you said, you know, you're staring at each other in the four walls, and I'm sure there's so many other couples out there who are feeling the same way. And so for all of us kind of going through that, what kind of wisdom and advice would you give in that scenario, in that setting?
First of all, I'd say to you that even though you're a pastor and you're running the church, you're human. And you're going to have frustrations. Yeah. And, you know, and I think for myself and Jerry, even though I'm a therapist and I know how to do it, I know the theory, I've studied it, I mess up. Yeah. I mess up all the time. And, you know, Jerry's trained up to master's level in therapy as well. And he knows the stuff. But we still mess up and we still, you know, frustrate each other and still push each other's buttons. So there is an element of normality, you know, and that we're just like everybody else, you know, even though we might have jobs that are in the caring profession where we look out for people. But you asked me what can people do about it, really?
Yeah.
You know, I think, and there are lots of strategies for dealing with some of the things, you know, so if we think about even maybe the frustrations that are going on. So, you know, when you talk about you and Jill and you talk about maybe, you know, there's been some frustrations, or you get frustrated with each other. Where I would go to with a couple is I would get the couple to try delve a little bit beneath the surface.
Right.
What's going on? You know, what's happening in the relationship? Are you both so busy doing what you're doing that you don't see each other anymore? You know. In the therapy world, we might say that, you know, your attachment needs have been triggered, you know, in that. And our attachment needs are things like when we feel securely attached to somebody, we feel safe. Mm-hmm. But when we don't feel, you know, securely attached, we can feel a little bit like a comment will just be like a spark in a tinder forest.
Yeah.
And before you know it, it just goes up and explodes, you know. Yeah. And when we see reactions like that, we know that there's something else going on, you know, under the surface. Mm. And there is very practical things to do, you know, particularly with couples around trying to get a couple into a place where they feel safe to talk, you know. Mm. Because sometimes what happens is you get situations where they might have an eruption, and then, you know, one of them might detach, withdraw, you know, numb out, and the other might get louder and louder. You
yes.
know? And it's about trying to de-escalate stuff like that and try to get them to come back to a place where everything just calms down, you know, because when that happens, you know, when, you know, it's, you know, heated, you can't connect. Mm. You know, neuroscience takes over. Your brain starts pumping in cortisol into your system, your heart rate increases,
yeah.
and you don't connect. You know, you just respond, and usually it's not good.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And, you know, personally, I found that, you know, if Gillian would say to me, you know, you're complaining a lot, or, you know, you're giving out, or you're being tired, or you're being short, and my first reaction is to put the fists up, you know, and to go lean into that and to defend, rather than actually owning it and saying, I'm sorry and I need help. And how would you advise people? Because I know from speaking to so many couples, particularly in the church, that is going on a daily basis.
Yeah.
What would we do?
So first of all, we're hardwired to defend herself. So if our partner or our loved one criticizes us in any way, we're hardwired. Mm. But at the base of the kind of criticism is a complaint. And the complaint is, you know, it can be anything. You know, you don't see me, you don't hear me, you don't listen to me, you're not there for me. It can be all kinds of different things, you know. And again, at the base of it can be those attachment questions. Do I matter to you? You know, will you be there for me? And will you come to me if I call you? Yeah. And when those are, you know, when the answer to those are maybe or possibly or maybe later, then the attachment stuff is triggered in a person. And then they begin to get swamped with hormones that they don't really want in their system. Mm. And they get flooded and then they respond and react in funny ways. But I think what you're asking me, Sean, is, you know, when stuff like that gets triggered, what do we do about it?
Yeah.
You know, so how do we deal with it? How do we come back from that? You know, and there are some really good strategies,
right.
You know. Let me use a metaphor, okay. Right? There is a metaphor for what you're talking about, you know, and it's almost universal in relationships. And it's a metaphor for what we call hailstorms and turtles. And it was coined by Harville Hendrix, an author, couple therapist in the States many years ago. And he says that what happens in relationships is that when a couple sends out for a bid for connection and it doesn't happen, mm. often what happens is the one partner will get louder and louder and they'll storm all over the other partner.
Yeah.
And when that happens, they're usually in a relationship with somebody who does a turtle thing.
Yes.
And they just put their head right into the turtle shell. They hide, they don't connect, and they don't come out until it's safe to do so. And that's usually when the other person is gone. Mm-hmm. And so it just perpetuates this problem all the time.
Yeah.
So what we know needs to happen is, in order for connection and communication to happen, a couple has to feel safe.
Yes.
And so in order to feel safe, we've got to introduce some safety, you know, behaviors, if you like, or ways to couple for couples to safely connect, you know. And that's one of the ways that I would work with couples, you know. Let me give you an example. Like, I think a classic thing is that couples often want to talk at an inopportune time, you know. When maybe one partner is busy or distracted or, you know, or the comings and the leavings of the house. You know, somebody comes in and maybe their partner is busy with the children, getting dinner, and, you know, they want to chat about something. And arguments can happen because sometimes one or other will feel, you know, the other's demanding and, you know, the other feels that, you know, you just, you know, ask me questions at the wrong time. And so a good strategy is to ask, is now a good time to talk?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and ask, is now a good time to talk? So what you're doing is you're asking, can we sit down and chat about stuff so that you cut out this, you know, behavior of the turtle and the hailstorm and that you establish some kind of safety. And then within it, you know, what I do when I'm working with couples is I use a couple of different types of therapy. But one of the types of therapy I love is a therapy called Imago therapy, where I get, you know, the couple to sit down, usually opposite each other and quite close. And I get them just to hear one another and just to listen. And I get them to strip away some of their responses. So I don't even allow them to respond. I just ask them to tell their partner what they heard them say.
Yeah.
And really all they can ask is, have I got you? Or is there more to that? Mm. And or tell me more. And it's actually very powerful, Sean, because what happens is people come away from that feeling heard.
Yeah.
They feel safe. They can connect because there's a level of safety that's been established in the relationship.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes it feels like what I witness in the counseling room feels like a spiritual connection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really powerful. And it's at moments like that that I sit back and I feel like I have the best job in the world because I have the privilege of sitting before couples and helping them negotiate some of the tough waters that they can go through.
Yeah.
So the joy.
And I think the biggest problem, you know, for us personally, but I know for many couples is the same right now. You're having passing conversations.
Yeah.
Because, you know, especially you got responsibility at work, at home, with kids, you're passing and you're having these passing conversations and one wants to talk, the other doesn't. And oftentimes I find that if it's me or Gillian, we're thinking about what we're going to say, not listening. And I know, you know, we've done imago therapy ourselves, and actually sitting down and listening actively to the other person, it opens everything up. And it sounds simple, but it's, you do need to assign that time, don't you? And the one thing I just would love us to just encourage everyone who's watching and listening and to know this, that when we're in this space and we're disconnected from everyone, we feel like we're the worst people on earth. Our marriage is the worst because we're always, you know, there's tension, there's frustration. But just encourage others that everyone is going through the same thing. Would you say that?
Absolutely, everybody is going through the same thing. And there aren't, you know, there are maybe rare exceptions, you know, I think. And it's not only, you know, during this time, I think relationships and marriage at times is work. And it's hard work, you know. And I think, you know, Jerry and I are married for 32 years. Uh-huh. And I think we could probably have separated a couple of times in that 32 years. But, you know, we're no different to other people. We've gone for counselling. We've really tried to improve things. We've gone to do marriage seminars and marriage workshops. And I think it's really important for people to know that, you know, it's not just them, you know, that this is a universal issue that people, it's definitely heightened by the pandemic and by what's going on and by the social isolation. It's without a shadow of doubt, it's heightened by that. And some of the issues that they had before have, it's like there's, you know, they've exploded.
Yeah.
And they might have been small before, but now they're, you know, magnified, you know, where people are just continually pushing each other's buttons because they're so frustrated.
And I think for a lot of couples, they don't know where to turn to for that help. And Zest Life is preparing a couples training in the coming months. Do you want to just maybe speak into that for a moment?
Yeah, we're both Stewie Wilson and myself are planning to put together a workshop for couples, you know, for everybody, just to do a 1-day workshop. Our dream would be to have it in person, you know, in a big enough arena that we would be able to have, you know, plenty of space between each other when maybe the lockdown's over and things open up. But if that's not possible, we hope to have it online. With an online presence. So keep an eye on our website, zestlifecollege.ie, or mail me directly at my email address, which I don't know, we can put up or, we can give you a link to, and I can give you some information when that's about to, you know, kick off.
Yeah, and we'll also, as a church, open arms, we'll let you know as well over social media when it's going to be happening and get as many people as possible to tune in and sign up. And so just moving on and looking at other relationships, a part of this, and I know even those who are not married or might be in a relationship that's not got there, I'm sure that they can apply many things that we've just talked about to their own friendships and relationships. But, you know, for those of us who do have children, toddlers, babies, teenagers, the lockdown has been particularly, especially this lockdown, this time has been the most difficult, especially those parents who are homeschooling while also having other responsibilities and multiple children. And oftentimes we take our frustration off on those who are closest to us, and that can be our children. And how can we rather relieve the buildup of stress and frustration within ourselves as adults, as parents, and just to stay lighthearted and strong-minded? What are some of the ways that we can do that?
I think going back, you know, to some of the things even that we spoke about, Sean, you know, that if you feel connected to your partner and you feel like you're dealing with frustrations in a healthier way, then you feel safer.
Yeah.
You feel more connected. And when people feel safe and they feel connected, they can play. Mm-hmm. Couples can play. But when they don't feel safe and connected, they can't play. It's not safe enough to play. So they don't have fun.
Okay.
So fun goes out the window. But, you know, I think an important thing for families at the moment, and for families particularly with children, is to think outside the box. you know, have a school day, but have a school day in the forest, you know, have a school day up the top of Tree Rock. Do some things that's going to create memories that are maybe going to be lifelong memories. I read a piece of research. About the some studies that have been done around the pandemic and around the, you know, the outcomes of it. And one of the things that they were saying is that for children, that children are actually experiencing, you know, grief at not being able to hang out with their friends, not being able to see their relations, their grandparents, their cousins. And kids are actually feeling lonely and alienated and isolated. And kids as young as 5 and 6 are feeling very low, you know, getting down and feeling depressed and coming to their parents and saying things like, I'm feeling very sad. I don't want to get out of my bed, you know, and that's not right for children.
No, it's not.
So there's something about this that we have to do to try and be creative to get kids to connect. You know, if it means going to a park and kicking a ball around or whatever it means, that we've got to find a way within the guidelines that we have to try and help kids through this process and help parents, because, you know, for a lot of cases, parents are not only working from home, the children are studying from home. And, you know, it just becomes a place of incredible tension, you know. So if the tension builds up and the frustrations are not dealt with, then what parents are going to do is they're going to take it out on each other, but also on the kids. And so the fallout is the kids, you know.
And we've seen this with our 7-year-old Levi. He's at that place because it's the height of his social inclusion. He loves friends. He loves being around them, and not being able to see them for so long is so difficult. You know, looking out at how our children are affected in this lockdown, how can we help them? How can we kind of come outside of our own bubble and all of our own stress and frustration and see them?
It's an interesting question, Sean, you know, and I think as parents and, you know, it, not only as parents, but as people in the lives of kids, it could be, you know, their aunties or siblings. I think it's I suppose, listening to kids and connecting with them. That guy, Harville Hendricks, and that Imago group did a piece of research in the States about maybe 25 years ago, where they decided that, you know, these principles of kind of listening to one another, mirroring back, reflecting back and empathizing. What would happen if we taught this to kids?
Right.
What would happen to those kids? Would they, you know, would they manage it? Would they be able to do it? And so they actually sent a team in to do a piece of research. And they taught the kids how to sit opposite each other and how to listen to one another, how to not answer, but just tell the other kids what they heard them say. And the kids were well able for it, and the kids loved it.
Right.
And the kids came home and began to do it with the parents. No, mommy, you're not listening to me.
Yeah.
And they sat their parents down and they started doing it with the parents. But interestingly, you know, they went back and they've done some more research on those kids when they ended up in senior high or something like 17 or 18. And as a class of kids, they were the most incredibly emotionally intelligent kids around.
Wow. Okay.
And they were astonished by the findings of how much more emotionally intelligent that they were than other kids. And so even for kids, it really is about getting down to their level, making eye contact with them, asking them how they are, and telling them what you hear them say, you know, like even reflecting back feeling and emotion, you know, whether it's joy or happiness or anger or hurt or pain. And also finding moments with children where you catch them doing something good and you admire them.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I think, like you said, it's this is a great opportunity to actually be with our children and set them up for success in the future. So I think that's fantastic. And looking at then, you know, our wider relationships. So even parents, married people, children, you know, single people, we all have friendships and a desire for friendships. And we've seen the likes of Zoom, FaceTime, WhatsApp, Facebook, and the other hundreds of platforms have almost replaced face-to-face conversations. So we used to do this and sit across the table or go, you know, go for coffee together in a restaurant or at a coffee shop, and now it's all replaced through a screen. And I personally have found it difficult to keep connected like so many others, because technologically fatigued, you know, where you know, it's just constant through the phone or whatever means. How can we overcome these barriers and these tensions to maintain a healthy and whole friendship or relationship with extended family? What are some of the ways that we can do that?
Firstly, I think I really empathize with people who are in those positions, you know, where they're maybe living alone, they're, you know, they're not house sharing, they're not in a relationship. It is absolutely excruciatingly painful and lonely for people like that. And I've had people like that in my counseling room, you know, who maybe are not from this country, can't be with their loved ones and family and are totally separated from them. And, you know, we know from Genesis that it is not good for man to be alone. We need people in our life. Yeah. We're born for connection, you know. I think it's the way we're designed, you know.
Yeah.
There's a researcher, or not a researcher, a writer called Irvin Yalom, and he says that we live in the shelter of each other, and strife is better than loneliness.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you even think about that, it's better to be with somebody and be in strife than be lonely, you know. So for people who are living alone, I think it's very, very difficult. But some of the ways to manage it are, you know, to reach out. Reach out, you know, because depending on their personality, they'll either go into despair and loneliness and, you know, almost like go and hide away from people and slip into depression, anxiety, and or they'll reach out, you know, and they'll seek connection with somebody. And I think as a body and as a church and a body of believers, we really have to look out for people like that. And, you know, I think one of the things I love about Open Arms and I love about, you know, what you guys have been doing is that you have been week by week by week saying to people, you know, don't be alone.
Yeah.
Make the phone call, pick up the phone, tell somebody, you know, go for counselling. Counselling is available to you. You know, Zest Life Therapeutic Services have counselling available to people. And, you know, so there's lots and lots. And if you don't live in Dublin, there's lots of areas around the country that you can seek help and seek counselling. And of course, because therapists are considered social care, they're essential workers and they're still open. So a lot of therapists are still seeing people, which again is my preference. I love to see somebody face to face.
Yeah. And I think it's important. And of course, with, you know, being safe and social distancing and that. And, you know, we as a church, we recently set up a helpline because we're aware some people, it's difficult to say I need help. It really is. And to have we set up that helpline. We've also partnered with Zest Life and we've got many, many counselors. So if you are struggling or you need help, please do reach out. We are here and don't go through it alone, like you said.
Yeah.
And just looking at that in terms of, again, the friendships, community, and many, if not most people listening have got some sense of spirituality or are Christians, do go to church. Myself, you know, as a pastor, I'm a pastor because I love people, because I love seeing people grow and flourish in Jesus. I believe the church is the best way to see that happen with one another. And it's been really difficult. Church online is amazing, but it does not replace the real thing. It's been really difficult to feel connected with our congregation, with one another. And what are some of the things that we can do to maintain these relationships with one another, with our church, with our friendships, and to build momentum in this area? What would you speak into that?
I think we have to work within what we're allowed to do at the moment, you know, but I think I wonder within that, can we develop some levels of creativity, you know, because I think that whether you're a pastor or whether you're somebody who attends church, you know, on a, you know, a regular basis or, you know, on a scant basis, I think you still need the same thing. You need people in your life, you know, and I think, and it's people in your life, like for the likes of yourself, Sean, you know, I suppose some of the things that I'd love to see for people like you is having support groups of people who are like minded, you know, like having a support group of pastors and like could just meet in a park and Could you? You know, actually, I was in Marley Park the other day and I seen something and I thought, oh my goodness, that's so lovely. I seen three men and I would say that they were probably in their maybe 80s and they had come to Marley Park. They sat well more than 2 meters apart and they had three little deck chairs.
Right.
And they sat down and they had a great old chat. They had a cup of coffee in their hand and it looked like something, you know, warm on their laps.
Yeah.
But they were able to connect.
Yeah.
And I think as a body of, you know, believers, I think we've got to find ways to do that.
Yeah.
And we've got to find ways to meet with people. And whether we, you know, have it in our social bubble or whether we find a prayer partner to do this with or, you know, I think we've got to find ways to have some kind of fellowship or some kind of a meeting of minds. We need it.
Yeah.
I think spiritually we're starved.
For sure. Mm. And I think, you know, it's like when you know you need to go to the gym and you don't want to, but when you do it and you step outside your comfort zone, you walk away from the gym going, I feel amazing. You know, I had that recently with my pastor friend, one of my best friends. We hadn't seen each other in months and we spent hours talking and we both walked away feeling full, you know, feeling like, and I think like you're right, we can do that. You know, now I know it's been raining and snow and everything, but we can kind of step outside of our comfort zone and reach out to one another.
Yeah.
And I would just encourage anyone to do that. And maybe you're in need, but maybe it's for you to reach out to someone else that's in need. Not just waiting for someone to come to you.
Yeah.
And just to kind of to finish up on this, I feel like when I'm talking to people and some people are doing great and they're doing well and they'll kind of be able to take out the nuggets from our talk today. But there's two types of people I find who are struggling. Those who are overwhelmed with loneliness, with seclusion, with needing that intimacy that we talked about, whether it's spiritually with connection with others or just emotionally. And then it's the person who is overwhelmed with too much, you know, whether it's their spouse or their family members or, you know, teenagers growing up in their frustration with their siblings. How would you speak to those people? Firstly, who are living alone, staying healthy emotionally, and those who are living with others, staying healthy emotionally.
Mm. I think for people living alone, staying healthy emotionally is very, very difficult, Sean. And I'll tell you why. Because when I say that we're born for connection and we're not able to live alone, man just cannot live alone. The science, there is science to back that up. You know, in our brains, we have a system in our brains called our limbic system. And our limbic system is like the seat of our emotions. It's where we feel things. And what happens and what neuroscience and neuroscientists tell us is that our limbic system regulates itself outside of the body by using the limbic system of another person.
Right.
You can't do that with a screen.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, even as a church, we can't do that. We need eye contact. We need empathy. We need presence.
Yeah.
And I wonder, is it a spiritual connection that happens?
Yeah.
You know, because and we've known that we need that, but now science is, you know, from the research that's coming out of places like the Gottman Institute, where they've researched it for maybe 40 years, they're saying this is what happens and this is what we need. And so we actually physically need to be in the presence of another person.
Right, yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, we absolutely need it. So that was your first part. Remind me of your second part.
Those who are inundated, overwhelmed with those around them.
Hmm. And that is a very interesting one as well, because again, sometimes at the base of that is personality.
Mm.
You know, if you're an introvert and you're stuck in lockdown and you've got lots of people around you and you've nowhere to go, you nowhere to get out of the house, you're going to really struggle.
Mm.
You're going to really struggle because introverts are energized by being alone.
Yeah.
And whereas extroverts are energized by being with people, You know, so it's, in some ways, it's, you know, if there's lots of people around, extroverts love that. They just give me more of it. I'm an extrovert.
Yeah.
And Jerry's an introvert.
Right.
And at times during the lockdown, we had 7 people living in the house. So that was busy. There was nowhere to go. You know, like Jerry would put his hand up first to go to the shop. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I've done that myself.
A path worn out to Duns.
Yeah.
So, but again, it's honouring that. Mm. And saying, okay, this is me and this is what I need. Now, what do I need to do to have my needs met? Yeah. Because ultimately that's at the base of it. Because if your needs are not met, then you're going to do the stuff. Like I've seen in with couples, you know, introverts creating a fight so they can get a bit of space.
Right. That's a smart way of doing it.
But not a healthy way.
Yeah, no, definitely, you know,
it's
not.
It's a temporary fix.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've still got to do a repair. Yeah. Know? So it's really honouring that and recognising, okay, we are needy, we have needs, and if we can learn how to express our needs in a healthy way and deal with them differently, and even deal with the stuff, you know, that comes up for us when our buttons are pushed, mm. you know, if we can deal with that differently, we can have a much better outcome, you know.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, for your wisdom and insight. And I really hope that that was an encouragement to you and that you were able to maybe take some practical things from that and apply it to your own life. Maybe you just need to listen back over it again to find the part that really relates to you. But as Louise has already said, we have got an array of counselors and help to be able to help you going through this, to not go through it alone. As a church, as Zest Life, as counselors, that we can help you through this. We'll also let you know about the couples course that was going to come up in the coming months. But thank you so much, Louise. Thank you so much for watching and listening. And we'll be back the first Sunday of every month. Have a great week.